Episode 790.
Hello.
He can. Episode 790, Brain Candy Podcast, creeping up on the old 800s.
800.
That's when it's going to get real good, I think.
You know what? It goes every other 100 or so. You say you're like, yeah. Some you're like, oh no, this is going to be terrible. And then maybe for like 500, you're like, these ones are going to be great. So yeah, I'm thinking real good for 800.
Yeah, I have a good feeling about it.
I never like it when a year has an 8 in it. Like, I'm not looking forward to 2028 because this is going to sound silly, but I don't like writing 8s. Because I can never decide if I'm doing two different circles connecting or doing that loopy swoopy thing.
Yeah, the sideways infinity.
Yeah, I go back and forth, and I never like them either way. And then, like, the bubbles don't line up. I'm like, oh, fuck.
That's going to be a tough year for you.
Tough year.
Well, at least we have time to prepare.
Yeah, we do. We'll be okay.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good.
Are you
good.
Holding
I'm
up all, over there?
I'm holding up. I went to, fun thing. I got out of the house for the first time in 4 weeks. That was very exciting.
Oh my gosh.
I went to the Denver Museum of Science and Nature. And
nice.
Here's what you should know about me if you don't know this already. If it is fun for ages 5 to 10, it will also be fun for Sarah. And it was especially hilarious when I walked in there and there was a little girl who was literally wearing the exact same outfit as me. Like head to toe, same boots too. I was like, oh.
Wow.
And Eli's like, I see it too. And I'm like, I'm in my happy place. Like I've even dressed like the children here. But so they have all these exhibits and the one that I of course was really interested in after all of our conversations we've had recently was the space exploration exhibit and like little like it's very interactive, you know, like a science museum is. And they had the thing that really stood out to me, they had this area, like this little board where you can smell what space smells like.
No.
And you might be like, oh, space smells like nothing. Well, no, they absolutely know what it smells like because the the stuff in the air, basically, this particles that are in the air and all the different elements and stuff that when they mix together, certain ones have certain smells. Like the air of Jupiter smells like raspberries. What?
No.
Yes.
For
there's
real?
Like an ethanol something else that mixes together. And then we don't have, because space out in outer space, there's like, it's void of anything. There's nothing out there, but there are reports from astronauts of what it smells like, and you could smell it when they like go back into the space station, they take off their spacesuit, the other astronauts can smell it as well. And it smells a little bit like rotting meat, like barbecue in a weird way, like barbecue and tires. It's nasty. And I thought it smelled terrible. And Eli was like, ooh, that smells good. It's like a campfire.
Because it's like smoky.
No,
yeah.
No, hate it. Gross, terrible. Disgusting, but
that's
yeah.
Really
so
strange.
Knowing what outer space smells like was so.
What
crazy.
Would you have predicted it smelled like? I would have thought musty.
Oh, like an old closet, like a Goodwill,
like my mom's basement.
Yeah,
like a Goodwill.
Okay. That is such a good question. What do you think outer space smells like? I think it would smell more. Yeah. Must or like almost, but that doesn't make sense. Almost like what it smells like after the rain. But I know that that's like a lot of particles, and that's a whole bunch of stuff getting churned up. We talked about that in a past episode.
Yeah, that's,
about what
you
that
think that's
rain
too complex.
Is. Too complex. There's like nothing out there. So that my mind goes to, I don't know, clean laundry, but that also.
That sounds nice.
Right.
Nope. Smoky
like,
bones
know.
Or whatever. What did you
yes.
say?
Yes. Fucking nasty smoky bones.
Wow, it's like Guy Fieri.
Vegans are gonna fucking hate it. Yes, yes. Space is gonna smell like Guy Fieri. You heard it here, folks.
Wow, Flavortown. That's awesome.
Yeah. I also saw, speaking of Guy Fieri, two Guy Fieri updates for you. One, a local ski, yes, I know, a local ski resort near us. I almost sent you the video, but I was like, no, I think I just have to tell her to set her up for it. A local ski resort up here, A Basin, Arapaho Basin, I think that's the full name, has a day where everybody dresses up like Guy Fieri and skis the mountain.
Wow.
So I'm like, I wonder if that could be Susie's gateway into
Even Guy Fieri can't do it.
She can't even be tempted with donkey sauce. Of all the
celebrities, right. Why do you think they chose him?
I have no idea. Maybe it's because, I was going to say it comes with good accessories. Like it's easy to find, like the shirts with flames on them, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. And like, are you going to dress up like Guy?
No, I don't have a season pass to that mountain. And also I will not be skiing. I do not have a season pass to Flavortown.
That is free. Flavortown's free entry.
I fucking made that joke that day. And then my other Guy Fieri update is that, I saw that somebody threw a Guys and Dolls party where people either dressed like Dolly Parton or Guy Fieri. And I was like, fuck, we need to do that.
Wow. Man, he's a cultural phenomenon.
Yeah. Iconic. I feel like he might be for Gen... What's the Z. After Gen Z? Like, even after that. Susie just made a face. It was great.
I can't get past it.
Contempt, right? It might be kind of like how I looked at Bob Ross, or maybe, you know, it's kind of like, okay. It feels a little bit like novelty throwback.
Yeah, and like wholesome, like,
yeah,
nothing controversial, just
funny, identifiable hairdo,
mm-hmm.
Easy go-to Halloween costume.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, I'm glad we know
catchphrases. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he's a real character, that
Maybe
guy.
Maybe that's like a recipe for how to be a cultural phenomenon. Like, you just need a recognizable hairdo. Weird Al kind of fits into this, too.
Yeah, you're right. They are not subtle, these people. Dolly Parton, too. It's flashy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's all.
Maybe
I got
our Earth Tones overall combo isn't cutting the mustard.
Right. Right.
Okay, I'll take that note. Good to know. Thanks for those updates. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, you know.
A lot of Guy Fieri content so far.
I keep you on your toes. That's right.
You really do. So does Guy. Yeah. I'm sure something that Guy Fieri would approve of is delicious wild grain bread. Am I right?
I approve of this.
Yeah, man. This stuff
is
tasty.
I cleaned out my freezer, and I found in there, buried at the bottom, some breakfast biscuits.
Nice.
Cranberry and orange. Oh, yes.
So good.
I busted those out, and I ate all of them because Eli's on keto, which means more for me.
Well, they have fresh breads, fresh pastas, fresh pastries. They have chocolate chip cookies. I've gotten so many things. In fact, I just added for my box this month, Bavarian pretzels.
Oh my God, I love a pretzel.
Right? This Meister.
To go with it. Oh, yes. Yes.
I mean, you could have the mustard and the cheese. You could go back and forth. Anyway, it's all delicious, super fresh, just convenient as heck. And you can have most stuff in like 25 minutes. And then right on the table. For a limited time, you can get $30 off your first box, plus free croissants in every box when you go to wildgrain.com/braincandy to start your subscription. You heard me. Free croissants in every box and $30 off your first box when you go to wildgrain.com/braincandy. That's wildgrain.com/braincandy. Or you can use promo code braincandy at checkout. And it's all customizable. Like, if you want all pasta, you go for it.
Yes.
I won't stop you.
If I were to buy those four croissants individually at my favorite local bakery, it would be the same price as the entire Wild Grain box.
Oh my gosh.
I did the math.
It's a real bargain.
Yeah.
You're going to love it. All right. Okay. How about let's start with a little debate.
Oh, I love a debate.
Or, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back and forth. So there was this guy who bought a lottery ticket and went on the app and saw that he had the winning numbers for $340 million and then went to get his dollars. And they said, oh, whoops-a-doo, that was an accident. We didn't mean to publish those numbers on the app, that we were running a test. And you could throw that right in the trash. And he did not throw it in the trash, and he got a lawyer, and he wants that dough.
I'm on his side. I read this too.
Yeah, so you think...
What do you mean? This feels like Pepsi, where's my jet?
Yeah, right. You're so right, Sarah.
I'm like, I don't give a fuck if you, in your doing whatever you were supposed to do, made an error.
Yeah.
These are the rule. This is how it goes. You announced this.
Yeah.
Oh, no. He's going to get that lawyer, and I hope he wins, and fucking A. I'll get out there, and I'll
You're going to pick
protest.
It.
Protest, yeah.
Yeah. Well, because you know how, like, if somebody has, like, a near-death experience, and then they survive, and then they have, like, a whole new, like, fresh outlook on life, and they appreciate it? This is the opposite of that.
Yeah.
Where, like, you thought everything was going to be amazing.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine?
No!
No! Oh, I'm physically ill. I'm actually sick to my stomach right now.
Because you can imagine reading those numbers and being like,
Susie, I remember one time, this is when I learned that scratchers and lotto stuff is not for me. I was playing the crossword scratchers like you do, and I was one scratch away. Like, if it were that one letter, it would have been, like, not even big. It would have been something like $1,000, maybe $5,000 or something. I felt that dopamine, serotonin, like, it was so high. I was like, this is it, baby. We're hitting big. Oh, my God. This is the moment. This is it. Meanwhile, I've won literally 137 times, 1,000 times that on reality television, you know.
But you're still chasing that high.
In this moment,
you're scratcher.
I scratched it off, and it was not that. And I was like, oh, never again. Never. That was too much. I flew too close to the sun. Wings melted. Crashing down. Bad, bad feelings. Like, I was like, gambling is not for your girl.
Yeah. You just can't take the highs and lows.
So I can't even imagine what it would feel like if I actually scratched that off, got the winning ticket, experienced all those feelings, went to turn it in, and they were like, this is just fakies.
I know, they were like, mea culpa. Like, as if it's, like,
LOL.
You just throw that away. Yeah. That's the thing that really got to me.
Yeah.
They were just like, oh, no. Just throw that away. What are,
like,
you saying?
What? I can't. It's right here.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm rich, baby.
I'll
be following that lawsuit because I want those lottery hookers to pay. Pay
it. Wouldn't it
figuratively
be funny
and literally
if he somehow got his money, then used it all to buy lottery tickets and then won more than that?
It's been done.
I know.
It could happen. I don't know how you top 340 million though. That's a
jackpot. That's what he's going for. Oh no. Oh, he's, oh
yeah, there's a lot more than your $1,000. Windfall.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
You would think at that moment, like, my life is forever changed. I've made
forever.
It. I don't have to worry
forever.
Anymore.
Oh my God.
Anyway, we're on his side. I'm glad we both agree about that.
Yeah. Outrage. Outrage.
Did you happen to see the documentary? I think it's on Max. It's called They Called Him Mostly Harmless.
Yes, I did.
You did. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Tell me your
thoughts.
That
was an interesting documentary.
Yeah, it was. Well, the premise is, I'll just tell the listeners.
Yeah.
The premise is, if you haven't seen it, that there was a man who was found dead in a tent out in, you know, the Appalachian Trail, I think, or one of those trails. And they just couldn't figure out, like, who he was and what the heck happened. And so the movie is ostensibly about that, finding out who this man was. But, I mean, I think Sarah would agree that the real
it's about so
interesting part about the film is about the people that, like, create these Facebook groups and think they're going to solve the crime. You know, my worst enemy, all these idiot detectives on, like, the just keyboard warrior, whatever. And what their lives look like and why they may be invested in all this. Okay. So that's
thought it was such an overlap between the hiking and nature community and the yeah. online sleuthing community.
Yeah, you're
and
so right.
True crime. I'm like, I love everything about this.
That is so and true.
Yes. And so the way that you might be thinking, oh, well, I'm sure people, you know, go out into the woods and you know, maybe are living out there and then they just pass away. And that the circumstances under which they found him were very peculiar. He had mm-hmm. good gear. He was
money.
Wasted away. He was very, very thin. And he had money. And he also, inside his backpack, found these pages of what was essentially like computer code, like gaming code. So they're like, this is somebody who's somehow connected to the tech world. And then the more they tried to find out who he was, the almost like the less they discovered, like this person had no data trail, no footprint online, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. you almost have to go to great lengths to do that.
Yeah.
And then
yeah, he was unusual.
I thought it was also interesting. They talked a lot about what happens to a person after they pass away when we have no story about them, but they're found doing something like hiking, and the people who met him create this whole story about who this person is. There's this whole online community dedicated to finding him because, you know, he's a member of the hiking community and we all look out for each other and blah, blah, blah. And he's such a great guy. And then you find out that ain't true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a shocking part too. And that is an interesting idea when you don't know something fully, and so you fill in the blanks with whatever serves you, and then realizing like this person that you sort of romanticized and idealized as the sad victim in a tent and what happened, poor soul, and then finding out maybe that is not an accurate, you know, description of who he was.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, first of all, I had no idea the hiking community was so weird. I mean,
that, let me tell you, that is East Coast specific because
really?
I have never in my hiking years, and I would say I'm on the hiking community, like on the peripheral, like I'm not in that, like doing that every weekend or going to the hiking clubs or anything like that. But I went to a couple Sierra Club hikes in California. Like I'm, you know, I've never heard of trail names. I believe that that's a thing. I believe that and I know that there are little trail books that you sign and all that stuff. And like, I totally get it, but this was like on a different level. This almost feels like along that trail, they've created this community because they had names. They called themselves like Trail Angels or something. Never heard of that.
Yeah. The Trail Angels.
I'm out there. I'm camping.
The Trail Angels bring water and snacks. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of granola, like trail mix happening in little baggies.
But then at the same time, I can also see people doing this because people go out there with fucking nothing. Like, was it on that documentary or it's either on that documentary or in real life? My brother told me this, that they found a couple people hiking and all they had on them was a 2-liter bottle of soda. And
that was not in the film.
Okay, then my brother said this. I the last few weeks have been a blur, and I like blurred a lot of things together. So my brother was saying that that they go out there thinking that they have the right stuff, and they were with a 2-liter bottle of soda, and was like, oh no, this is our like water, and that's different.
Yeah.
And so I could see that, but
I appreciate the sentiment that pretty much everybody in the film that was eager to solve this case really wanted to be useful. And Arnold and I love that about them,
yes.
that they want to do something helpful, but A lot of times I feel like they're misguided, Sarah.
Yeah, and I think people are... I wouldn't say that any of them had good work-life balance.
We're being real nice because these people are
fucking nice.
Unhinged.
Yeah,
like this is lose their marbles.
It's obsession. It's an obsession and it's a fixation, and it's like I think it's a replacement for something. There's something
like a life.
Correct. There's something that this brings value and meaning. And there's another way that you're not finding value or meaning in other places of your life. And I think it was interesting. There was one woman that was talking about how she wanted to open up a women's outdoor recreation center. And when she did do that, she became less involved in the online community and the other woman took over. And I'm like, okay, that feels like a good example of how you can get online is not real life.
Yeah.
And you can get caught up in thinking that that is real life if you don't find meaning outside of online life. Yes, they were useful in that way, but
Their intention was good.
Yeah. I would be interested to hear from their family or other people that were maybe close to them about what they were like as people during this time. I bet not very fucking present.
Right. Well, I'll tell you that what those trail angels should take out on those hikes is some liquid IV because those hikers really could use it. I mean, it's this stuff will alive. Hydrate you.
And you, liquid IV.
I know. I'm so glad that's been helpful to you.
Before my surgery, the doctor said, I need you to wake up 3 hours before you leave and drink a clear liquid to stay with electrolytes. Like liquid IV. And I was like,
that's awesome.
Are you doing a commercial for me right now? This is perfect.
It's perfect. It's tasty. They have amazing flavors. They have sugar free. And I didn't receive them yet, but I ordered, I didn't know they had kids ones. And so they have a cotton candy flavor that I think Link would like.
Oh,
so I ordered some of those because I think he would really get into it. He likes, you know, when we're having a fun little dinner, he wants like a champagne glass or whatever. And it's fun when you can make different concoctions.
Who doesn't love that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like his
anyway, however you, however, what if I was like, no, there's alcohol in it. just joking. However you hydrate, grab your liquid IV hydration multiplier, sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code CANDY at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code CANDY at liquidiv.com. All right. Well, I would recommend that film. The trail name of that guy was Mostly Harmless, which was, you know, ironic. But they called him Mostly Harmless. Okay.
That sounds fucking creepy.
Yeah.
I think he was harmful.
He was harmful for sure.
Yeah.
RIP though. Yeah. Anyway. did you hear about how there's in Florida... like a mystery noise that the residents are like, what is that?
Oh, no. This is not our first report of this. Do you
really?
Remember?
Did you talk about it already?
Yes, I did. Not in Florida.
I do not remember.
But we talked about this I even remember the number, 55 residents in either Norway or somewhere like that reported a strange noise. And then you said, imagine how loud the noise have to be for people to report it. Cause if I heard a strange noise, I'd just be like, what? And so for 55 people to report it, that must have.
Wait a minute. Yeah. Was that one the tremor one? Was that a, remember? Cause you said they called the Geological Society or something. Is that the same one?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe.
But what was it in the end on that one?
I don't think they had an explanation for it. It was just a strange noise.
Well, we have one.
Oh,
we have an explanation and it's great.
Oh God, Florida. Of course it is.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Okay. So we're in Florida now.
You're like, calm down, Sarah.
Strange noise. No, I think that's useful because what if this is explaining all of it? Because that would be extra funny.
Okay.
In this case, it's residents of Florida were at bedtime. It was nighttime and they would hear this horrible noise and they couldn't figure out what it was. It's an eerie thumping bass and it went about a mile inland. And, you know, let's just have a fun little, let's make Sarah guess because she'll probably get it right game. Okay. Do you have a guess?
Oh, I thought you were going to play it for me or something. Play the noise.
No, no. It's just like, based on those clues.
Okay.
Could you
eerie
theorize?
Thumping bass. This sounds like a yacht party.
That's what they thought. They thought somebody's having a party or like...
Somebody's having a party. Okay. It's
being
not a party.
A hooligan. It's not a party.
Is it animals fucking?
Yes!
You know what this feels like? This feels like if I were to actually scratch off the last little thing on the crossword scratchers. That's what it is. This is,
you get $0,
like. $0, but
same serotonin.
What a rush.
Is it animals fucking?
Yeah.
Yes,
well,
it
you
is,
know what
Sarah.
What tipped me off was that the loudest noise that they found under the sea was that freaking mantis shrimp or whatever, like flicking his dick. And rubbing his penis against his stomach, and that was making the loud noise. They thought it was coming from a whale, so now I'm like, everything's probably mating calls.
Wow, good. Wow. Wow.
That was a fun game.
That was, because, I mean, I had faith,
I love any game I win.
That was a hard one. Yeah. Okay, so here's the details. This eerie thumping bass is likely epic mating calls of black drum fish. They make a bumping bass beat by flexing muscles against their swim bladder during mass spawning frenzies. It's really exciting time for them.
Like, we didn't guess that by the fucking name of the fish. Susie, you always say that your name gives it away. It's the black drum fish. Like, what's that loud drumming sound?
Yeah, but why
I don't know,
is
probably
it
the fucking
sudden?
Drum fish?
I don't understand why.
Maybe
it would seem like this would be a yearly event, so it must be a climate change thing.
Mating season is only seasonal. Like,
right.
Especially in
That's
water.
What I mean.
So what I would imagine is that somehow their area for mating has been pushed inland or something because of climate change or because of, like, deep sea something that they're doing out there. They're doing something in the water that's driven these fish inland or there's something with the different change in the temperature of the water. Like, they need a certain temperature in order for them to do this. And then,
that's why they didn't
shows.
They didn't suspect it for, you know, and even now I think like it's just sort of like, we think that's what it is. Cause we can't see them doing their business.
Oh my gosh. I love this story.
Why can't someone do that for me?
I love it, but I watch you do your business? I mean, OnlyFans.
No, I want someone to send out that call, make it loud and proud. Like, Susie, I want you.
Well, I feel like Adam did the opposite thing.
Yeah, he's subtle.
He was like just listening to you with a microphone and was quiet.
I'm the drum.
Yeah, yes, that's exactly what happened. This is like the reverse of the
Animal Kingdom. Oh, thank you. I texted Adam because whenever you got it right, I wanted to push this button. And my soundboard didn't work. So I was like, Adam, we have an emergency. A trivia-related.
Trivia-related emergency.
My mating call is just like texting Adam. Hey, can you fix my soundboard? Thank you.
I'm on it.
Okay. Anyway, great guessing. Really impressive. I never would have guessed that in a million years. Just telling you right now.
Well, one of the other things that I saw at the Discovery Nature and Science Center, Denver Science and Nature Museum, whatever the fuck it was an IMAX movie on Susie, I am kicking myself for not getting the yearly membership to the museum so that I can go, because you have to pay for the museum entry fee in order to see the movie, and then you have to pay for the movie too. So if I get both, then I could just see.
I'm going to give you a little tip.
What?
I'm going to give you a tip. At least this is true of all my museums. You can just go on the website and there's like a media section and you can request like a media pass.
I'm going to do that.
I bet you.
And then look at me.
Free.
I'm giving them. I'm talking about it. We're sharing.
Yeah,
we're advertising.
It's the least they could do.
Least. Right. And so they had the film I watched was on the Antarctic and how much of it, like, there is a lot that is being discovered with climate change that is waking up a lot of things that are dormant and pushing mating to different areas. And it's very, so this kind of, as interesting as the story is, as much I love the story, it's alarming to me because big changes in mating habits or reproduction cycles of very important food along our food chain is like not a fucking good sign, people.
Yeah, it's bad news bears.
Bad news bears. I mean, some hopeful stuff at the end of the documentary like they do.
Yeah, they there just do one, that so oh you don't God. Leave crying.
There was one scene, I have to talk about this, that was some seals that they go up on land to, or on the ice, to have their babies because the babies can't swim until they're like 10 days old. So they have their little pups and then they have to just use their blubber and their body weight to protect the baby from the snowstorms. And it can get as cold as negative 90 degrees. What? And so this mom seal is like, this storm is too much. I have to save myself. She goes back in the water, leaves the seal, and then the music gets all sad. And then I hear 20 children around me go, what about the baby? What about?
Oh,
and I'm
no.
like, oh my God. If I have to do an emergency counseling session for 40 crying children because, yeah. like, group therapy for all these crying children or their parents, because, like, please, please do not. And thank God they knew who their audience was. And then they, like, miraculously, the pup alone by itself survived. And you see a little pup crawling over, and you're like, okay, mom, why'd you ban your baby?
I mean,
you should have just stayed
this
there.
Is probably a good lesson.
I was terrified when I heard, no joke, 20 little voices, the kid sitting right next to me go, Dad, what about the baby? What about, I was like, ah, please, nature
what?
Documentaries do not do what nature documentaries often do.
Man, David Attenborough would never. Yeah,
right. I want like the adult version of that because I feel like that was maybe edited to save the children or something.
Yeah, right. They're protecting your feelings.
Oh,
yeesh.
I was like, oh, looked at you like, oh no.
It
oh,
is
no,
weird
no, no.
how, I mean, there is a limit to like maternal care in the wild.
Oh yeah.
They're like,
oh, yeah.
I'll do
like,
some.
Right. Yeah. But they prioritize this. I, in a way, like this is like a lesson that I often have to talk about with a lot of moms that I work with. And, you know, they always use that analogy of putting your air mask on you first. And
they love that.
How? They, of course.
I'm just joking.
And,
but go ahead.
Yeah, but I do. I mean, you have to. That we have to care for ourselves in order to be able to care for anybody else. And you, it's almost like the other societal messages of like, don't prioritize yourself.
Yeah.
And like that like a social, you know, message that we get to make us not do that because when you take that away.
Mm-hmm.
That mom's like, it's fucking cold. If you're dead, if I'm dead, you're definitely dead. So let me just go make sure I'm dead so I can maybe have another one of you and carry on this lineage.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's what they're doing. They're like, I got to protect me because maybe next season I'll the storms won't be as bad.
Yeah, redo. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Well, being a parent is hard, and mornings are a real tough one around here, but they are much better now that we have Hatch Restore 2, the sunrise alarm and sleep machine. It's so awesome.
This is a game changer for anybody who has, like, I know for me, sleep is something that's hard to regulate.
Mm.
And there are so many, I don't know, different things we experience that disrupt sleep.
Yeah.
And we know like that's where it starts. So this is a way to get a good sleep rhythm. It's funny. My supervisor had been referring client, like recommending this product to clients before she even recommended it to me. And then when I found out it's one of our sponsors, I'm like,
yeah,
well, that's perfect.
It is perfect. And Sarah's right. It teaches your body when to wake up and when to go to sleep. It creates these routines that prioritize rest. So it's awesome. It's just great if you have kids that don't want to wake up. There's exclusive content also on their app, Pillow Talk. It's a new audio series designed to entertain you to sleep. That's cute. And that's you can do without screens. So that's nice. You can get to sleep without relying on like
that light. It makes such a big difference.
Right now, Hatch is offering our listeners $20 off your purchase of the Hatch Restore and free shipping at hatch.co/braincandy. Visit hatch.co/braincandy. Get $20 off and free shipping, hatch.co/braincandy. And as always, all of our codes are on our website, and we are so thankful when you use them. It helps us so much, keeping the lights on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes
next
I have conversations with friends. Oh, it was the Hatch thing. Oh. My friend Ashley, I was talking to her, and she said she had the app on her phone. And I was like, did you get a Hatch? And she was like, yes, I love it. And I was like, motherfucker, that's one of our – call me first. Everything that you like, I'll get you a discount on. Use my code. I could have hooked you up.
Use the code, baby.
Oh, I wish I knew that. Why don't people talk to me? Like, help me out.
Come on.
Help me help you.
We don't ask for much. Help me help you.
Yeah, don't pay full price. What are you doing? I love giving people a bargain.
Me too. We're doing the Lord's work over here.
Yeah. Speaking of bargains, you know what I'm seeing a lot of that I am so obsessed with? All these new, like, young kids with a interest in only getting things from the thrift store, and this new trend of like upcycling and like this going back to like older fashions, tailoring things. I am. Mm-hmm. Is it just me who's seeing this like wave of?
Yeah, I do think there's a movement for sure.
Yeah, I'm. Mm-hmm. I'm very hopeful about this.
Yeah. But then I also see the other extreme where it's like people buying like on that Shine or whatever those terrible websites are.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people really love all that stuff because it allows them to buy a lot more for less.
It's like one way or the other, right? It feels like people are in one camp. It's like,
it does.
It 100%.
Yeah. But I'm with you. I'm a big fan. Even when I was sending your birthday presents, I was like, I hope she doesn't mind that I used like real wrapping paper.
Because like,
you're like, birthdays are too much waste.
This is the problem is that I make these announcements and then people take it. Like I said to Eli one time, like anybody who buys flowers on Valentine's Day is a fucking idiot because who would pay three times as much for something that the day after you can get for the same price? Guess how many times I've gotten flowers on Valentine's Day? Zero. Oh, no. Why? Because he's like, you made a big announcement. I'm like, okay, but that means you like
buy a plant.
Right. Thank you. You go buy a plant instead. Something that's not jacked up a price on that day.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm just frugal.
Silly.
I'm not.
They take it too literally.
Right. So.
And like, we're not going to turn them down if you hand them to us.
Right. Duh. let me throw them right in the garbage. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Right. Like that lottery ticket.
Yeah.
Okay. There was this study. It's so weird. This was in the New York Times and the article was called Our Rodent Selfies, Ourselves. A photographer trained two rats to take photographs of themselves and they didn't want to stop.
I'm sorry.
What?
All I'm hearing in my head is that song, Let's Take Another Selfie. You know that song that was like popular? Oh my God, I'm going to play this for you and you're going to really laugh. And I'm just imagining two little mice like drunk at the club, like in the bathroom taking selfies.
Yeah, I mean, and you would love this article. I'll have Delia put it in the newsletter because it's got these huge selfies that the rats took. And it's like they are standing on, you know, like in a cartoon, those like boxes with a handle on top that like has dynamite.
TNT. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. TNT box or whatever. That's like what their selfie machine, how they did it. Like they had to hit like a button and then they got to see themselves on the screen right then.
And but they don't have any sense of self.
Well, I mean, maybe they didn't know it was themselves.
But they recognize that
I like that
get
guy.
See another rat when they push that.
Yeah, we don't know. It's just it's a curiosity because they trained them, of course, using drugs and food and stuff like that to do it. But then, long after they stopped giving them any rewards, they wouldn't quit with the selfie machine.
Okay, and because these pictures there are hilarious. Has been the introduction of a reward with that action. Mm-hmm. So their brain has painted a map, a roadmap. This is what they say when they say it's the pleasure pathways of the brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like there's a pathway that's been created to pleasure yeah. through that activity. So even when you take the pleasure away, the brain goes, well, if I follow this path, I will get that reward. And in a way, you look at how most of the things that we post online or our interactions or our selfies don't give us that dopamine hit that we're looking for that maybe we got the first time or whatever. So in a way, it's like not paying us out for that. But our brain keeps thinking, I should keep doing this because maybe it will in that one way it used to or one time or few times that it did. It's totally gambling. It's like a slot machine.
Yeah. And I mean, it's explored in the new Michael Easter book who wrote Comfort Crisis. He has a new book called Scarcity Brain. And he describes this idea and how, you know, like you say, slot machines and stuff are built on this model of unpredictable rewards. So like, you know that you're not going to win every time.
Right.
You just don't know when you are and that your brain is programmed to
and the lottery,
want,
in fact.
Yeah, I guess so. That's true. And social media.
Yeah.
100%. You know, it's just the same. It's rewards. You don't know when you're going to get them.
Comments. And don't you think Instagram and all those, like, in the same way the slot machine switches up how they pay out or when they pay out, so does the algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, weird. I posted this at the same time of this day. How come this one only got this many likes? And then people get so bent out of shape. I'm being shadow banned or whatever they say. Like, fucking relax. Like, everybody's, like, desperate to get their fucking social media fix.
The part that I think was on the more surprising side is that even when you introduce sugar and rewards that they can just have right there, they were still taking the selfies. So, you know, a sugar reward pathway exists too in right. their brain. And yet they would always choose this thing that was no longer even giving them sugar.
I think that we've seen the same thing in, like rats have chosen the activity that pays out only, like pays out randomly over something that's always there before.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like something that I can't remember what study. Maybe some listener knows what I'm talking about and will message us this, send us what I'm talking about. But I feel this sounds familiar, that it goes against what you'd think, that tells us we this is why we maybe engage in risk-taking behavior or why we do something like gamble when we can just go to the 9-to-5 job and get the guaranteed paycheck or whatever.
Yeah. It's such, I guess it's just something to keep in mind as you navigate the world, because a lot of people and organizations are attempting to leverage these quirks of the human brain.
Yeah.
And if you're aware of them, then you can moderate your behavior. But if you don't realize it's happening, you can get really sucked in.
Yeah. It's kind of like little kids when they go to a candy aisle or when they go to a cereal aisle. All of the thing, and you as an adult can go, oh, I'm not going to get wooed by the Trix rabbit. You know, I'm not, the bright colors and the marshmallows aren't going to tempt me away from, you know, a healthier option or whatever it is. But damn, that works on the little kid who doesn't have the awareness of the ways that those things are influencing their choice.
I mean, it also works on the adult though too, who's just like tired or
and you know, busy in mind. Totally. 100%.
Because they put things at eye level that they want you to, you know, they position things. Everything is working against you.
Yeah. if that prefrontal cortex, that executive functioning, is at all not online, if it's under stress, if it's made a lot of decisions during the day, if it's like thinking about, then you are going to be operating in that automatic, like, animal brain that does, let me take a selfie. Exactly. Let me get the most good feelings the fastest.
Yeah. It was cute though. I think you'll enjoy looking at it because it is funny to see their selfies.
I definitely want to see rats taking selfies. What if they all started making duck lips?
Right.
That's like the next evolution of this.
Peace out.
Yeah. I'm always jealous of girls who can stick their tongue out and look cute. Like, it just...
You feel like you don't have the face for it or what?
No, I have too big of a tongue.
Huh. What, too wide or...?
Just too everything. Like, it's just too... It's like that's all we're looking at. Too small of a mouth for how big my tongue is.
No. When did you first decide this?
When I could realize that I could touch my nose with my tongue and nobody else could. And then I was like, let's do some tongue comparisons. And I was like, whoa.
And you don't think that has anything to do with like the physiology of like the distance between your nose and your mouth?
100% it does.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Just checking.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay. Everything in ratio, or like in relation to, yeah. It doesn't look cute.
Bringing this up, but I am so into it.
And every time I do it, I look in the picture and I'm like, you scrape your tongue or like brush your, like, I, wow. You know, I notice like, man. And I do daily. It's not even bad, but I'm just like,
a lot of self-criticism over there.
Too much area, too much geography out there.
No, you talk about geography. You know how about I have the geography tongue?
I sure do.
I mean, things could be worse, Sarah, because that is not cute.
Yeah. Yeah, you got the continents.
I have an atlas.
Your tongue. Yes, you do. Yeah. That's fun.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about all from the comfort of your home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, last thing. Let's see.
Last thing. This episode went so fast.
I know. Flew by.
We were just talking about the hiker.
There was a documentary called The Truth About Jim, which is also on Max. I really liked. It was 4 episodes. That was a real long one. But it was about this woman who had a grandfather who was creepy and abusive and like, you know, one of those people that's like dark, like a dark soul where you're like, ugh.
Yeah.
And so she started like exploring different elements of his life story and accusations that were made about him or just, you know, the divorces he experienced and all his kids and blah, blah, blah. And so she felt that there was a good chance that he might be a serial killer, like a literal serial killer.
I saw
the
preview for this. Yes.
Okay. And so the whole series is her just walking through that and presenting all the evidence and then deciding whether this could even be the case or not. And it is fascinating in terms of the true crime element, but again, all these, there's so much true crime now that they almost have to have more to it for it to differentiate from all the other ones. So I think in this case, it's really considering that thing that I think a lot of people have where you have a family friend or a family relative where it just feels like something ain't right. And it's usually a man and it's this sense of like, you don't feel safe around them maybe, or there's something that makes you unsettled, but you don't want to make a fuss about it because you maybe don't have any concrete evidence to,
right?
Because then if you tell someone, they're like, okay, you have a bad feeling.
And, yeah. And you can only really accuse Grandpa being a serial killer one time out loud before you're the person who's...
heading off to the old psych ward. Right. But I thought that was interesting because I do actually think it's relatable, which is sad that I think a lot of women...
I would agree.
Know someone where they're like, if you heard that they turned out to be a serial killer, you'd be like, okay, I can see that.
Half of the family that I don't speak to.
they're on the suspect list.
I'm waiting for the police to knock on my door and say, are you a relative of so-and-so? I'm like, yeah. Luckily, none of my close relatives, Jordan Lucas, you guys are good. But brothers are safe. But
I would recommend it, though. I found it really interesting. And a lot of the relatives, a lot of his kids and stepkids were women. And then, of course, he has three ex-wives. And so it was a lot of women sort of comparing notes and being like, yeah, that happened to me or whatever. And I guess it's more encouraging of us to do that a little bit more. Like,
yeah,
follow the gut a bit.
Absolutely.
Ask questions. And
yeah.
Yeah. That was good. I recommend it.
And maybe first talk to a therapist about how people are not all one thing and separating who you are from maybe who your family is.
We should all do that.
Yes.
I'll bury this at the end because I don't want anyone being mad at me. But I told you before I read this article about, I think it was in The Atlantic. Let me pull it up. It was about people's attachment to their pets.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was The Atlantic. The article is called Pets Really Can Be Like Human Family. And we hear this a lot, you know, like people referring to their pets as like their fur babies and you know, feeling like they are as important as like people. And I don't happen to fall into that group. I've never felt that way about any of the pets I've had, despite my affection for them.
Yeah. Well, I don't like to say pets are like people because pets don't hold you accountable. Pets don't, they're the support that they're able to provide is limited. They are wonderful supports. They're very good at helping with emotional regulation. They're really good at being, but they're in a way when they're doing that working. Mm. And so pets provide a service for us. And I think that people confuse the service that they provide with like the same kind of support that like a family member or a child would provide. Like that's.
Yeah. And it's indiscriminate. Like I've seen dogs that really love their weird owners.
Right.
And it's not that that dog sees something in them that we can't see. It's just that that's what they're biologically bred to do. Yeah. And so it's a beautiful thing that connection that you can have, but I wouldn't go so far as to say it's like a person, full thing.
But I will say that the loss of a pet can feel the same as like grieving the loss of a pet when you can feel like the loss of a family member or somebody like that. So we can have the same, we can like hold them in our, they can provide that same kind of meaning for us.
Let me ask you this though, because it's sort of used that as an example of like, you know, when someone does lose a pet, how sad they can feel and how deeply they can mourn it. And that I get, especially for a dog. But if you called me when Bo died and said, I'm sorry, Suze, I can't make it to record today because I'm mourning Bo.
No.
I would not be happy about that.
I made it
and
to record
so
every
people
day.
People were saying like they want to be able to take like pet bereavement time off. See what I'm saying?
No, we can't be doing that. That's what, because what I think is we are not getting better at handling difficult emotions as
this is what I am saying.
People. And yeah. I think the majority of the work that I do as a therapist is help people navigate difficult emotions, whatever they may be. And we are, especially in America, forced this be happy all the time, everything's fun, and celebrate. It's like this life, but only it's just, there's no we have just a different relationship with death than other countries mm-hmm. do. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of that gives us this idea, this sends us this message that we're not supposed to experience bad feelings, hard, difficult feelings. Mm-hmm. And so when we do, something must be wrong. I must need to not carry on. I must be falling apart. Well, no, these are the feelings, the difficult emotions that are the flip side to all the positive ones and all the happiness and all the joy and whatever. And we have to learn how to navigate and manage and feel difficult emotions and get through those, because that's what builds resilience, and that's what helps mm-hmm. us get through the next difficult thing. And next, mm-hmm. You know, and it tells the brain, wow, look at, I did this really hard thing.
Right.
And it's protective. You know, that's why I love the traditions around death in Jewish culture and Judaism, because they give the loved one a task. Oh, your person passed away. We understand that you're not even going to know how to be a person right now. So you have a task. You get that person buried in 72 hours. And then you sit down and you cry a lot and you do absolutely nothing for the next 7 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're like, we recognize that you can't deal with this right now. So you're going to compartmentalize and focus and do that. And then you're going to take the time that you need to grieve. And so you can do the same thing almost with the passing of a pet. Like I did when Bo passed away, and I'd come to work and, you know, you do your job and you focus and you carry on, and then you go home and you give yourself proper time to feel and to cry and to be sad. And then you, the next day, take a big deep breath and you do the hard stuff. And then your brain goes, wow, I can't believe I got through yesterday. I'm going to get through today too. And then you keep doing that, and that builds resilience.
Yeah, I agree. Would you call Bo family?
I would say Bo, like, yeah, but like not in that same way.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, and especially when it was just the two of us, you know, it felt like, oh, she's like my little, it's like me and Bo, we're like a little team, you know, but yeah. I wouldn't say that, like, you know, I think especially now that with having a hysterectomy and like having to think a lot about family and a lot about changes with that Bo would never be able to feel the same as if I, say, had a child.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm sure there are people, though, for whom, I think so, but I bet you there are some people who, like, or putting them up on that pedestal with their kids. Because it said almost every American that owns a pet, all 200 million of them, almost all of them describe their animal as family. Mm-hmm. And more than half of pet owners say their pet is as much a part of their family as a human member. Almost
that,
half.
See, that I hear, that's hard for me because, like, I take a literal, like, what does that mean? As much a part of their family. So a part of the family, does that mean that dog engages in the day-to-day activities of the family, is always around the family, is eating with the family? If but in that sense, Bo is,
I think,
a
that
part
they're defining
the
it as, I would have to know if that's the exact wording on the questionnaire, but if they're saying as important, matching in importance as each member, that would shock me if about half said yeah.
That would too. We're playing trolley car and it's like...
Exactly. Let's get down to brass tacks
and
here.
Your child. Yeah. I'm picking the dog. I'm sorry. The end.
To die, you're saying.
To die.
Just to be clear.
Correct. The child is living.
That...
Yeah.
I don't know who needs to hear this, but that is
the correct answer.
That is the right answer. I know you love, you know, Petunia, but.
Right. We hit a deer the other night when we were driving.
Because
there's like an overpopulation, and it's like, yeah. I just said to him recently, I can't believe we've never hit a deer, because they're just everywhere.
Yeah.
But we've hit one, and that was a real bad, like, it feels very sad.
Oh, no. What happened?
Well, you know how they travel in groups, and so, like, you'll see one. So we saw one pass right in front of us, and then Adam's like, uh-oh, and then the next one came right before we could stop, and so we hit it, and it died.
R.I.P.? Oh.
R.I.P.
Okay, well, yeah. I'm glad you guys weren't. Harm,
you said it. I know.
Like that those hooves come right through it's the windshield.
Dangerous.
It's
oh my
very
god! Can
dangerous.
You imagine, like in Tommy Boy,
right?
That's like, what in the back seat.
Oh god!
You know I that thing back there? It's not an air freshener. It's a dead, rotting deer carcass. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not an air freshener. I love that. Oh, I was just having this conversation with Eli because we were watching a movie where it was based in Australia and. This woman hits a kangaroo, and the kangaroo is like clearly suffering, and she chooses to drive away and not put it out of its misery by like running over it again. And Eli was like, "What would you do?" And I'm like, "I could not run it over again. I would humanely stab it before I ran it over." I know. Eli was like, how does that make sense? And I'm like, I'm not fucking kidding. I would rather stab a kangaroo than rerun it over. Because then what if you don't do it again the next time? You're just like back and forth. Now, like, that's a fucking scene. Now we're playing fucking Grand Theft Auto with this kangaroo's life. Like, I could not handle that. So
I would just have to humanely kill it.
Like,
I thought you were just going to say, I'll leave it there to die.
No, because that seems worse. Now you're leaving it suffering. You have to, it's not going to make it. You're either putting it in the, like taking it to get help, or if it's like, this is
stab it.
Stab it.
For real. You'd get a knife out and just go to town.
I'm not going to, it's not overkill we're doing
here,
Susie.
How many times would you do it?
One, a clean cut, clean, real quick, in a place that would be very much like this is, you know, kind of like they say. I've watched a lot of Alone. They're like, you got to shoot the arrow right into the lungs or right into the, so it like, or heart, so wherever. So die is like instantly, not like suffer.
Wow. Well, I really
that's
give
the humane
you
way
credit.
To do it. Look, I didn't
I
mean
hear
to
what
hit
you're
it.
Saying. No, I hear what
it was
you're
an
saying.
Accident,
I just.
Susie.
Did not She's picture so- you like psycho.
I
with when the you, shower
I, my
scene.
Arm is not coming up. This is a gentle moment. This is me taking
More
that deer
like
and
slash.
Like finding the I don't know deer's carotid artery or something like that. And we're going like one real quick, and we're saying nice words, and we're thanking it, and we're like talking to the spirits, and then we're doing it, and we're it's not like reet.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You're like, I'm not an animal. Right. Oh, God. I did not see that coming. That's really funny.
I'm
we didn't have to face that.
Right.
We did not have to face that ethical quandary.
Thank God.
It was sometimes you hit them and you think that, well, they're a goner, and then they just jump off and they go away. They're very resilient, those guys.
Very.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I hope I'm resilient. We've been through a lot today.
Yeah, we have.
Thanks Life for death, listening. Space smells like barbecue.
Yes.
Which is great. Guy Fieri smells like barbecue.
Oh, that's so funny.
For
oh,
sure
that tickled
he does.
My funny bone. That was a good joke. Good joke. 10 out of 10.
Sarah can't play scratchers. The stakes are too high.
Too high. But what I will do is gladly accept anybody who wants to put scratchers in my stocking or give them to me as a birthday present.
Yeah, you that, know that.
Love that. Because, like, I want to play, but I don't want to lose my money.
Yeah, you have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Okay. Pets are not family, everyone. Okay. They can be like kind of family, like kind of like Alice on the Brady Bunch. Like they loved her, but she's like not Carol.
Oh, that's a good, yeah. In Trolley Car, we're picking a family over Alice. And yeah. No member of your family should be someone that you have to worry about might eat you if you pass away in their company.
That is so true.
That just seems like let's use that as
just good sense.
Good sense.
Okay. Thank you all, as always, for listening. We love you. We'll see you next time.